This is episode 146 of Beyond the Bulletin, published on November 25th, 2022. Hello and welcome to episode 146 of Beyond the Bulletin. From the University of Waterloo, I'm Brandon Sweet, editor of the Daily Bulletin.
And from Media Relations, I'm Pamela Smythe.
On this podcast, we go beyond the pages and pixels of the Daily Bulletin to inform you about important news and views from our community.
Coming up, Rebecca Rooney, a professor in the Department of Biology, joins me to discuss the value of wetlands, the rate at which we are losing them, and the risk to those that we still have left.
Thank you for joining us as we go beyond the bulletin. Well, Pamela, today is a day of reflection for the university. On November 25th, the day that this podcast is coming out, the university is celebrating the life and legacy of President Emeritus Jim Downey with a special ceremony and reception. Downey served as the University of Waterloo's fourth president and vice chancellor from 1993 to 1999 and died in March 2022.
You never worked with Jim Downey, did you?
No, he was just before my time. I probably was on campus as an invading Laurier undergraduate once in a while during his tenure, but I wasn't really plugged into, university governance at Waterloo during that time period.
And I never worked with him, of course, but I did get to interview Ken McLaughlin about him, and I feel like I kind of know him now.
Yeah, it's funny how that works. A lot of the research that I've done about Jim Downey for the Daily Bulletin and so on and so forth puts me in the same sort of position. I've seen a lot of photos that will be used in a memorial tribute at the event.
The interview that I did with Ken is actually on our YouTube channel, so if people want to check it out, they can. And maybe to make it easier, I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, and we'll also put the link to the live stream because this event will be live streamed on YouTube for the entire campus community.
That's what's coming up. What's been happening?
Well, what's been happening, Pamela, is that I've had that nightmare again.
The one where you're falling or the one where you dream that all your teeth are falling out?
Well, also, yes to both of those, which are, in fact, are very common nightmares, apparently, in this part of the world. But the one that I'm particularly thinking about is the one where I've been enrolled in a class and the final exam is coming up. And I realize that I haven't been to a single lecture or handed in a single assignment, let alone study for the final. I haven't even cracked open the textbook.
Ooh, that's a bad one. I think I maybe had that one once or twice myself.
The reason I bring this up is that the final examination period is coming up for Waterloo students between December 9th and December 23rd. And as students approach final examination season, the Associate Provost Student's Office has launched a campaign that will focus on student supports before, during, and after the examination period so they don't find themselves living my personal, albeit nocturnal, nightmare.
The goal of this campaign is to ensure students are informed of resources and feel supported through fall exams. Participating units include the Accessibility Office, Athletics and Recreation, Food Services, Campus Housing, Print and Retail Solutions, Student Success Office, Campus Wellness, and the U Waterloo Life Team. Student supports include peer success coaches, workshops, tutoring, academic accommodations, learn modules, free fitness, nutritional and healthy habit recommendations, mental health support, study spaces, study aids, school supplies, and more. What else is there?
These resources appear in one place, a general news item for students to find the support they need, and serves as a good resource for staff and faculty who work with students on a regular basis. Each department will aim to create consistent and supportive messaging across their channels and support each other's portfolios. Look for the circular Warriors Exam Checklist icon to indicate content from this campaign. We'll put the link to the news item in our episode show notes.
Winter can be a challenging time of year for everyone. Being able to identify signs and symptoms of distress and respond with empathy and support involves having a good level of mental health literacy.
Campus Wellness offers the Mental Health Literacy, or MHL, certificate, which was created to support faculty and staff to develop and practice these skills.
The program is for faculty and staff and encourages discussion and reflection on mental health through an equity-focused lens. Additionally, it empowers participants to build a supportive community of care, concern, and compassion.
Over the course of 5 modules, participants will enhance their understanding of barriers to mental health and competency in responding to a person in distress, accessing resources and supports.
If you're interested in signing up for this program or any mental health training opportunities, please visit the Campus Wellness Training page. We'll put the link in our show notes.
Now, here's what's coming up. As part of the annual 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence campaign, the Sexual Violence Prevention and Response Office, or SVPRO, is partnering with the Sexual Assault Support Center of Waterloo Region, Conestoga College, and Wilfrid Laurier University to address sexual violence on campus through a new campaign, hashtag Consent Matters.
An initiative of UN Women, 16 Days, begins on November 25th, the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, and runs until Human Rights Day on December 10th. This period also includes December 6th, the National Day of Remembrance and Action on Violence Against Women in Canada. The Consent Matters campaign invites students, staff, and faculty to take a stand against sexual and gender-based violence and to show solidarity by wearing the 2022 t-shirt or purple clothing and sharing your messages of support towards a culture of consent.
And in terms of other ways to support the 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence, you can post a selfie or group photo in your purple clothes or the 2022 tee on social media and use the Consent Matters hashtag and the 16 Days UW hashtag to share your pro-consent messaging with the campus community. Not on social media? No problem. Share your photos and your pro-consent messages online by visiting the SVPRO website. If you didn't order a t-shirt in time, you can wear purple or pick up one of a limited quantity of free t-shirts on November 30th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the SVPRO booth in the foyer of the Davis Center.
Visit the 16 Days of Activism website for more information and a full listing of events, including workshops and resource booths. Also, get your information on the annual ceremony to honor the National Day of Remembrance and Action on Violence Against Women. We'll put those links in our show notes.
On Giving Tuesday, which is November 29th, people around the world will come together in support of their communities and the causes they love to create a better world for all.
Last year was a record-breaking year for Waterloo's Giving Tuesday campaign, with more than 1,300 alumni, parents, faculty, staff, retirees, and friends donating more than $597,000 to support our students. This year, we want to smash that record with at least 1,500 people donating $650,000 or more.
Well, that sounds like a reachable target to me. The Giving Tuesday campaign is challenge-based, with 43 challenges to choose from in areas including the six faculties, university-wide, athletics and recreation, co-op and experiential education, Indigenous relations, the library, our schools and centers, and the affiliated and federated institutions of Waterloo.
There are also many challenges to unlock with matching funds provided by challenge champions from across the university. I didn't know that I had a competitive bone in my body, Brandon, until Giving Tuesday.
That's funny.
These people have put their money where their mouths are, so why don't we? We'll put the Giving Tuesday donation link in our show notes.
You know, there's a leaderboard that you can track to see how people are doing in the faculties and various other donations and whatnot. So if you are into gamifying things, then it can really become sort of a game that you want to win. The Center for Teaching Excellence is inviting proposals for the University of Waterloo's annual Teaching and Learning Conference, which will be taking place Thursday, May 4th, 2023. The 2023 conference theme is Teaching and Learning with Kindness and Care.
This will be the 14th annual University of Waterloo Teaching and Learning Conference, which will explore pedagogies of care and kindness in higher education to give instructors space to support one another in their teaching and learning. Based on mutual trust and respect, educators using these pedagogies undertake purposeful strategies to demonstrate kindness, care, compassion, sympathy, and empathy when they interact with students.
Well, a little empathy goes a long way, for sure. Conference organizers are accepting proposals for presentations, panel discussions, workshops, poster presentations, and a teaching and learning showcase. New this year is the invitation for proposals for pre-conference workshops that will be held online prior to the conference on Wednesday, May 3rd, 2023.
For more information, check out the Call for Proposals website. We'll put that link in our show notes. The deadline to submit a proposal is Wednesday, January 25th, 2023.
And now the interview. Chances are you've seen a wetland. That's because Canada is home to about a quarter of the world's wetlands. For now, anyway. They're disappearing, and with them will go the many benefits that they provide. Rebecca Rooney is a professor of biology who studies wetlands, and she's particularly concerned about proposed new land development legislation in Ontario. Bill 23, or More Homes Faster, and the possible implications for the environment, homeowners, and taxpayers.
Rebecca, I'm so glad you're here. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for inviting me, Pamela.
What is a wetland?
Wetlands are defined by two characteristics that we can measure regardless of the time of year. The first is the soil. When soil is inundated for long periods of time, it takes on certain characteristics that are visible to the trained expert and which are diagnostic of when we're in a wetland. And the second is the plants. The plants never lie. So the plants that are growing in a habitat are exposed to that standing water, that inundation. Only species with special adaptations to growing in wetlands can thrive there. And so the wetland community composition is also diagnostic of when we're in a wetland and what type of wetland it is.
What does a wetland look like?
In Canada, we classify five different kinds. Wetlands which have that soil I talked about, which is really mineral, nutrient-rich soil, then we have wetlands which have more of an organic soil. So the organic soil wetlands we call peatlands. Those are our fens and our bogs. When you think about the stunted black spruce, that's when we're talking about our peatlands. And then on the other hand, we have these mineral soil wetlands, which give us our swamps, which have trees in them, our marshes, which are really grassy but don't have much shrubs or trees, and also our open water marshes, shallow enough that plants that are rooted can still grow there. And those are the three kinds of mineral soil wetlands.
How many wetlands do we have in Canada currently?
We have over 1 million kilometers squared of wetlands, but we're also a really big country. So actually only 13% of our land base is composed of wetlands in Canada. But that's still a large share globally. It's 25% of the world's wetlands are located in Canada. But it's really variable place to place. So in the Hudson Bay lowlands, 80% of the land is wetlands. But down in southwestern Ontario, it's like 1% up to maybe 5% in certain patches. We've lost over 60% of our wetlands, and in urban areas, as much as 90%.
And what function do the wetlands provide?
I think of them as like a portfolio of ecosystem services, and it's really wide ranging. This is what makes wetlands such keystone ecosystems. So just to name a few, wetlands are really important sites of aquifer replenishment. That means for all the places where people are drawing their drinking water out of the ground, out of wells, they're relying on wetlands to recharge those aquifers. Wetlands are also really important in preventing flooding. So in places where we have, you know, high frequency of storms, high severity of storms, wetlands are slowing down the flow of that water and protecting our homes, protecting our property from flood damage. They actually break down pesticides. They also are extremely important in supporting species at risk. Over 32% of Ontario's species at risk rely on wetlands. They mitigate climate change. Wetlands are these climate change superheroes. In, you know, your typical terrestrial environment where the soil is dry most of the time, when plants are growing and they drop their leaves or they start to decompose, there's lots of oxygen available. And so they decompose really thoroughly. But in wetlands where the soil is saturated, at least some of the time, then the plant material that collects in the soil doesn't get the chance to decompose. There's just not enough oxygen to make that process very efficient. And so it builds up. And as it builds up, it creates this bank of stored carbon. And so, in fact, in southern Ontario, an analysis recently found that 1.3 billion tons of carbon remains stored in wetlands just in southern Ontario, which is the same as 1 billion gasoline-powered passenger vehicles driven for 1 year or 600,000 homes' energy use for 1 year.
Wow. Where are the wetlands going?
Well, in agricultural areas, they've been historically drained to make space for farming. And as farms have gotten bigger and farm implements have gotten bigger, it becomes increasingly challenging for farmers to drive around wetlands when they want to fill them in and just be able to farm right over them. But more now, we're seeing a lot of wetland loss as urban areas are expanding. And so in suburban and urban areas, that's where we've lost the majority of wetlands and where wetlands are being drained in order to be developed and built upon. So they're building housing developments on them.
But some developments have catchment ponds or even man-made ponds. Does that help?
Actually, we just did a study with Michael Drescher in planning in the environment faculty and one of his graduate students. And we found that there's an effective replacement happening. Looking at seven different municipalities across Ontario, the student Waverly Birch found that as the wetlands are being drained, they're being effectively replaced with stormwater ponds. And stormwater ponds are, you know, pretty good at storing stormwater. Otherwise, without those, everybody's basements would be flooded. But they don't provide the full portfolio of ecosystem services that the wetlands that have been destroyed to make place for that development used to provide. They may contain stormwater. They're not providing the same climate change mitigation. They're not providing the same quality habitat to species at risk. And they're not providing the same processing and breakdown of contaminants.
Because they don't have the same soil.
Yeah, they often don't really have soil and they don't have the same plant community and they're designed in a really different way. So they'll be very deep, more like a bathtub, whereas natural wetlands are flatter, more like a pan. So the active zone, biogeochemically speaking, is really like that inundated soil that's sometimes wet and sometimes dry along the fringes of the open water. And stormwater ponds are like a bathtub. They have a really limited amount of that. Natural wetlands provide this full suite, this whole portfolio of services. Stormwater ponds are engineered solutions that address some of the problems, but not all of the problems.
So what do you think of Ontario's Bill 23? More homes built faster.
I think we face a real housing crisis in Ontario. And it's a crisis in the affordability of houses. And unfortunately, what Bill 23 will do is exacerbate the rate of wetland loss we're already seeing across Ontario, endangering property and people, increasing the cost of insurance, increasing municipal property taxes, and robbing municipalities of access to expertise within our watershed-based conservation authorities. So there's actually a lot not to like about Bill 23. This has created this false polemic between the environment and housing, suggesting that we can only address one while sacrificing the other. In fact, what we need to do is address housing in a sustainable manner. We need to create housing that's affordable, and the best way to do that is through densification. We don't want to be building in the greenbelt. We don't want to be draining wetlands to build on them. Like, wetlands occur in topographic lows at the bottom of the watershed. That's where water is naturally running to under the influence of gravity. And so you might fill that in, dry out the soil, and build some houses there. But within the surrounding watershed, you haven't changed the topography. Water is still going to want to flow there. Even if you put stormwater ponds to deal with it, you're still going to have this propensity to flood. Retaining wetlands in our landscape and designing around them allows us to mitigate flood damage, which is only going to become increasingly common with climate change, increasing the frequency and the severity of storm events. And so what we really need to do is focus on building around floodplains. So it is big dollars to allow these irresponsible developments to take place in areas prone to flooding.
If you take a wetland away, build a house and say, oh, this was a bad idea, can you get that wetland back?
Unfortunately, no. I'm a wetland ecologist, and a big part of my research focuses on wetland restoration. And wetland restoration is a field that has benefited from decades of really successful research. We've really come to understand how to build wetlands to the best of our abilities, but it might be an impossible task to really recreate lost wetlands. In part, I mean, who's going to give up their million-dollar home in the suburbs to let it be turned back into a wetland if that's where wetlands were destroyed? Then, even if people did that, wetlands take decades to centuries, even up to thousands of years, to really mature. You know, there's been research that shows that even after 50 years of wetland restoration, it hasn't gotten back to the level you'd find in a natural wetland. So we're talking about a huge time lag that you have to reckon with when you start talking about compensation policies and moving wetlands around the landscape. Another super important aspect I want people to understand about that is that many of these ecosystem services wetlands provide are actually inherently local. So if I remove a wetland from the Laurel Creek watershed and I put it back in some neighboring watershed, it's no longer preventing flooding. It's no longer recharging the aquifers that Waterloo draws upon for drinking water. It's no longer improving water quality before it gets into the Grand River. It's not providing the services. Amount, the area or footprint of wetlands in the province hasn't changed. So the location of wetlands really matters, and we can't just move them around in the landscape.
Why do you think that Bill 23 would be a risk for wetlands?
So Bill 23 is part of a package that the Ford government is putting forward, including over 15 different submissions or proposals on the Environmental Registry of Ontario. And one of those, which closes on November 24th, addresses the Ontario Wetland Evaluation System. And this is the means by which wetlands in Ontario get assessed to determine if they're provincially significant. And if they're provincially significant, then they're protected. You're not allowed to develop on them. If they are not provincially significant, then they may be subject to development. So it's a really important mechanism by which we conserve wetlands within Ontario for the benefit of all Ontarians into future generations. It works like a report card. So there are sort of four classes that each wetland is assessed in. One is biodiversity, one is water quality, one is this special features category. And if a wetland achieves a high enough score, if it gets like an A+, then it's determined to be provincially significant. Unfortunately, the changes that are being proposed to the Ontario Wetland Evaluation System will dramatically undermine its efficacy and endanger wetlands across Ontario. And there's a variety of ways in which it does that. So the first way is that it takes away the clear lines of responsibility. Right now, the Ministry of Natural Resources and Forestry provides training in how to do this report card process, and it also holds onto the files. So that provides some kind of validation, and it also ensures that, you know, if there's any updates that need to happen, the, you know, files are traceable, they're publicly available, and they're in a sort of repository. We don't know who will be responsible. It won't be the Ministry of Natural Resources and Forestry, but we don't know who it will be. Most likely, responsibility will fall to municipalities, but municipalities don't have the capacity, they don't have the in-house expertise to provide that training, and there isn't necessarily a guarantee of harmonization across all the municipalities. So you may have OWES, or the Ontario Wetland Evaluation System, implemented one way in one municipality, crossover from Waterloo to Guelph, and now it's being implemented a totally different way. And wetlands span municipal boundaries. So it creates this piecemeal approach to wetland assessment and wetland management across Ontario that's going to be really problematic. And it also shifts this responsibility down onto municipalities without any increase in resourcing. So how are municipalities supposed to, you know, create this in-house expertise, and how are they supposed to pay for this management system? That's one way that these changes are going to endanger wetlands. Another is change the actual report card. So this wetland evaluation system right now allows us to do something that's called complexing. There's a huge amount of scientific evidence that connects parcels of wetland into a whole integrated network. So we can have lots of little wetland pockets that appear isolated geographically, but are functionally interconnected hydrologically, ecologically. And we know that they depend on one another. So if you start chipping away at that and you destroy one piece of it, the whole network is going to suffer. Under the current rules, wetland complexing allows us to take that into account so we can look systematically at the whole big picture of the wetland network. Under the revised rules, that complexing is no longer allowed to be considered. So each individual node or piece of the wetland network has to, you know, be evaluated independently. Mm. And if it doesn't get an A+, it's not protected. So this really undermines how many wetlands are going to be protected, and it's going to start to erode the protections we have for wetlands that are part of these complexes. The other piece is around species at risk. So right now, in the special features category, wetlands that are habitat for species at risk score more highly. Under the revised version, will no longer account for whether threatened or endangered species are using that wetland as habitat. And with 60 to 90% of wetlands in Ontario already lost, it's not a big surprise that so many of our species at risk are those wetland species. They have very little habitat left.
So what are you doing?
I have helped found a group of researchers, wetland ecologists, wetland scientists, turtle biologists, a broad sort of disciplinary background of researchers. There are over 70 of us now in this coalition that we call Save Ontario Wetlands. We have a website, which you'll link to in the show notes. And we're encouraging people to take action in different ways. There are these Environmental Registry of Ontario postings, like the one which closes on November 24th about the wetland evaluation system. And people are able to click on a link to go submit a comment to these postings to inform the government about their feelings about these proposed changes and to indicate, you know, their conviction to protect wetlands. There's also a tool on our website that will help people contact their member of provincial parliament, their MPP. You can call them on the phone or send them an email just by entering your postal code. There's also opportunities to sort of show up in person and protest some of the changes tied to Bill 23. I invite people to check out these different protests that are happening across Ontario, to contact their MPP and express their concerns, to call Minister Clark's office and express concerns, recognizing that we do need housing to be affordable in Ontario, but that these are not steps that are going to achieve that at all.
Well, I checked out that website, and boy, you sure make it easy for people to reach out. It can be very daunting. Some people don't even know who their elected official is. Never mind, how do I write a letter to this person or tell this person about something about wetlands, which I know nothing about?
The little tool there that will help you call your MPP or send an email, you know, gives you some text you can use as a template or some talking points that you can look to guide that discussion. But honestly, MPPs are really influenced to some degree just by the volume of concern expressed. So even, you know, calling your MPP and saying, like, I care about wetlands, I hear that these changes are bad, I don't like them, what are you doing? That's all that it takes. You don't have to be a wetland ecologist or you don't have to have a PhD to be able to speak to these issues, because they do affect us all.
You also recently had a cleanup, a wetland cleanup on our campus.
One of our study sites is on campus, and my master's student, Claire Sean, was out there all summer collecting data, and we couldn't help but notice that this sad urban wetland was really plagued by invasive species and also really full of litter. And we had planned as a lab to do a bit of a social activity and get together at the end of the field season and clean it up. But as you know, we got into September and these announcements started to be made about changes to the wetland evaluation system, the introduction of wetland compensation policy, Bill 23, changes to the Greenbelt. We started to see this was a broader issue beyond, you know, just our interest as wetland ecologists, and inspired actually by a talk that Kelsey Leonard gave from the environment faculty about the importance of connecting with nature and honoring our relationship with the land, we decided to try to open this up to the campus community as an opportunity for people to come out and do something really practical to make a difference in their environment. And so, you know, rather than just us as a little group doing it, we sent out a press release and we invited the wider campus community. CTV came and filmed some of it, and we were on the news, and we pulled 18 bags of garbage out of this wetland on campus. It's really powerful to go past that wetland now and see how much cleaner it is, and to know that we've made a difference. It was also really illustrative of just even these urban wetlands, which are full of invasive species that are clearly polluted, of the, you know, tremendous ecosystem services that they're providing, of the value that they're providing to our community. So those 18 bags of litter, if they hadn't been intercepted by this wetland, where would they have wound up? They'd have been in, you know, Laurel Creek. They'd have ended up in the Grand River, or they'd have been, you know, in the Columbia Lake. And this wetland was really visibly protecting those downstream aquatic habitats by holding that litter back. It was also, we went into the center of the wetland and pulled out a soil core just to show everybody the rich organic content of this wetland soil, that carbon that's being stored, locked away by the decomposing plant matter in this wet soil, which is, like I described, this sort of superpower that wetlands have to fight climate change.
When you remove a wetland, what happens to the carbon that it was holding?
Yeah, so I kind of describe this carbon storage and carbon sequestration to people like your bank account. So you have your principal, and every year it's earning interest. And the stored carbon that's in the soil, that's locked away and not decomposing, is like your principal. This is like the built-up accumulation of carbon from years past. And that's in wetlands, the bulk of what we're talking about when we say, you know, the carbon storage power of wetlands. There's also the interest that you're earning every year by having that wetland, and that's the sequestration potential. So every year the plants grow, so it can be like a lot of biomass, a lot of carbon that's taken out of the atmosphere, turned into plant sugars, and stored in that plant tissue. And then at the end of the season, you know, these are plants which start to decompose, just like in your garden, but because of the wet soil, they don't decompose fully. And so a lot of that carbon just gets buried and baked into that soil. And so you're adding to your principal every year with your sequestration. And when you drain a wetland, not only do you lose the, you know, principal, the stored carbon that's been accrued over many years, sometimes like a 10,000 year period, but you also lose that sequestration potential moving forward into the future. And so you have to kind of average that into your costs when you think about what we lose when we drain wetlands, not just the carbon storage, which is substantial, but also the sequestration potential for the future.
You're so passionate about this topic.
So it is really hard to maintain a positive outlook and to stay hopeful. And I think a lot of people are feeling like it's futile to fight Bill 23, like these changes to the wetland evaluation system are inevitable, like compensation, you know, policy is gonna be approved no matter what. We have to just reach deep and find the energy to call up our MPPs or send that email, or, you know, even just share on social media, talk to our friends and families about how wetlands matter to us. And one of the best things I think people can do to find that energy and to keep restoring that energy is, like Kelsey Leonard suggested, reconnect with the land. Do go out and clean up a local green space. Spend time watching birds. Do something outdoors with your friends and your family. And, you know, we need that energy now more than ever, because wetlands are on the line.
I'm inspired by your energy. So thank you so much for sharing it with me today and with our listeners.
My pleasure. Thanks, Pamela.
Well, that about wraps it up for us this week. To ensure you don't miss an episode, please subscribe to the Beyond the Bulletin podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And please recommend us to your colleagues and Waterloo alumni.
You can find us on Twitter at UW Daily Bulletin. Please follow us. Select interviews are on the university's YouTube channel. Just look for the Beyond the Bulletin playlist there. You can reach us by email at bulletin@uwaterloo.ca.
As always, thanks for listening as we went Beyond the Bulletin.
So this week is the first time I actually, you know, wished people a good holiday, a happy new year. And it's people I have appointments with, let's say, and then I won't see them again until the new year. And it really felt strange.
Well, once 96.7 starts playing Christmas music 24 hours a day, that's the official start of the season as far as I'm concerned.